WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Poet Robert Bly is one of the founders of the men's movement and the author of its most influential book, Iron John, which has just come out in paperback. He writes, "It is clear to men that the images of adult manhood given by the popular culture are worn out. A man can no longer depend on them." Bly has led many men's groups in which he's offered alternative images of men based on myth, fairy tales, and tribal initiation rites. He says in response to the women's movement, many men developed the part of themselves Bly calls the soft male, gentle but lacking in vitality and resolve. He works with men to develop what he calls the wild man. Bly also speaks of the grief men feel throughout their lives because they were never close enough to their fathers. Their fathers were out making a living, leaving the sons without a strong male guide. Bly has been leading men's groups for about a decade. I asked him about the changes the men's movement has gone through.
Of course, no one goes into talking about gender if they really want to be liked. So quite a bit of opposition has appeared to it, which surprised me a lot. And you can say that the mind of the media is still 20 years out of date. It really wants fights between men and women. And the purpose of the men's thing has always been when the men go into a place with more soul and come into some of the grief they have with their father, the enmity between men and women goes down.
How has being in the men's movement changed your life? Do you feel that you have been able to reconcile things about your father or that you've developed personally in any way as a result?
Well, I gave seminars and lectures for a long time on the matriarchies and on the goddess. And it was only 8 or 9 years ago that I began doing some work with men. And it corresponded, really, to a time when I decided I finally had to do some thinking and work and feeling with my father. So I think being able to talk to whole groups of men about my own grief with my father and have them respond with theirs was tremendously helpful to me.
And the cause of the problem with your father had to do with several things. One was that he was an alcoholic, and the other was that he was, pretty non-communicative, I take it.
Yeah, that's right.
So you felt that you never, as a young man, had a real father-son relationship with him.
Well, it's hard to say about that. My feeling is that I loved him tremendously when I was maybe 1 to 3 to 4 years old. After that, then I think that I was, I agreed with my mother that I would be on her side. And there was a lot of pain that she went through. And so I think it happened to many, many men that... they made a decision not to be a companion of their father, so to speak, but to be a helper of their mothers. And it wasn't a totally bad decision. I got a great blessing from my mother. At the same time, by receiving that blessing, you really find yourself cut off from almost all other men. And I think a lot of men in my situation find that they have to go back and sort of rewrite that contract with the mother. Not with anger, but just saying that, I fulfilled as much as I could with that contract. I tried to help you as much as I could. I took in as much of your suffering and pain as I could, and I have to recognize that I did not save you. And now it's time to feel and go back to find a place inside the masculine world. Does that make sense to you?
Well, on some level it does. On some level, I don't understand it, so maybe we can explore that a little bit.
What don't you understand about it?
Well, the sense almost that if you're close to your mother, that there's no place for you in the male world, and that somehow by identifying with your mother, that you not only lost the relationship with your father, but you lost your sense of yourself as male, and that somehow maybe it's your mother who's to blame.
No, I don't think, I think you'd make a mistake here if you go into blame. I think something like this will make it clear. We were in San Francisco. There were maybe 1,000 men there. One man got up in the middle and said, "You know, for the last 15 years, I have been a substitute, a husband, and a companion, and a lover for my mother. And I said to him, how do you feel about men? He said, I don't trust them. So we're talking about a situation here in which the women, oftentimes particularly single mothers, have so much financial grief, so much soul grief, so feel so abandoned that they move towards the son rather than the husband. And I don't think that's wicked on their side either. It's just what happens. And then sometimes they'll tell the young son, you know, your father was unreliable, all men are unreliable. And that's why he said at that moment, I don't trust men.
You write that men have to have a strong father and a strong male mentor as well, because there are things that a woman just can't provide. You write, even the best-intentioned women cannot give what is needed to a son. What is it, do you think, that a son can only get from a father or from a male mentor and that a mother can't provide?
Well, you know, that's an explosive idea. I mean, the whole situation. One of the things that surprised me in the response to the men's movement is that women often come down to this point, we don't want the men interfering with the growing up of the son. But the question is, why would we assume that a mother could do everything for a boy? Why is it a tradition in the past that the father and the mentor try to do as much as they can? So I'll try to answer that with a little metaphor. You know, the new work on brain research and the development of the fetus is very solid. And the general conclusion is that all fetuses in the womb are female. And about the sixth week, tremendous amount of orders come in from the DNA to change the female fetus, the body and the brain and the muscle system and so on, into what we think of as the male version, so that the upper torso is changed, some of the bones are lengthened, some of the vulva skin is turned and changed into the testicle sac, and the clitoris is enlarged, becomes a penis. All of those things happen. So you can say that by the time the boy comes out of the womb, he's a nervous wreck, because of the number of changes that have taken place. So the question is then, you can say that men are experimental species. The women are the basic species, and men are experimental. So the question is then, is the fetus completely turned into the male by the time it comes out of the womb? And the answer, I would think, is no. Because he's only about half finished. And what initiation means for men is that when the boy comes out, he is still partly with the mother. He's with the mother 2 or 3 years. He feels this resistance oftentimes. You see a 5-year-old boy sitting with his mother, and he tries to break out of her lap and leave and so on. That doesn't mean that there's anything she's doing wrong. It means that he is trying to proceed farther along this strange path towards something unknown. What is an adult male really look like? What is it? And so the older males in the old tribes then come in, and they try to help him move farther along that path.
You'll forgive me, but this whole thing about the womb and how it starts as a female and ends up as a male, and the male is kind of unformed and has undergone trauma by the time he's born, sounds a little far-fetched to me in terms of a theory for the men's movement. You know what I mean? In terms of an explanation of the male psyche or something.
Well, you know, there's a good book. A lot of this work has been done by women, one of them in Boston University. Read a book called Sex in the Brain. It should have been called Sex Differences in the Brain. But this is not an explanation of the men's movement. The men's movement would be in existence whether this happened or not. The men's movement primarily, in my opinion, has to do with the increasing distance between father and son. And that happens in the industrial culture because the father's out of the house. So you're asking me a question as to why male influence would be necessary. I'm trying to give you a metaphorical answer, which is that when the woman comes out of the womb, there's something there that's sweet and whole, and she goes through a tremendous amount of suffering after that. But it's as if her mother teaches her, by example, what a fully grown woman is. But I'm trying to explain that my feeling is that the boy, 5 years old, 6 years old, 7, hasn't the vaguest idea what it is to be a man.
Well, here's something I want to bring up with you that's related. You write that men have become more in touch with their feminine side. They've become more thoughtful, more gentle. But that process hasn't made them more free. You write, you know, a man could be a nice boy who pleases not only his mother, but also the young woman he's living with. But that can make him a softer male with little vitality to offer.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder how far that is from the stereotype that a feminized man is soft, that a man who hangs around the mother too much or women too much becomes soft, that femininity is soft and therefore bad for a man to be around. I guess, you know, this whole kind of genderizing of characteristics, certain characteristics are male, certain characteristics are female, that always makes me uncomfortable because it makes me feel like, well, as a woman, I have to conform to these certain things. For women, that's always been used against us.
I understand that. And Deborah Tannen, when she talks, always says, now, we're not talking here of categories in which you fit. We're talking about generalities on each side of the thing, like north and south. And there are some women who have more yang energy in them than men do. And there are certain men who have more yin and feminine energy than certain women do. So I think the danger is to be afraid that it'll be a category which will again diminish the value and self-respect of women. But on the other hand, the attempt to bring up, or the attempt to deny all gender differences hasn't worked well either.
No, here's something that I see as a kind of fundamental difference between how the women's movement and how the men's movement have gone about understanding gender. And you might really disagree with me on this, but it seems to me the women's movement has basically said, let's challenge all the gender preconceptions, all the gender stereotypes. Just because you're born a woman doesn't mean that you have to be, you know, a nurturing, soft, all the kind of gender stereotypes about what a woman is. And therefore, just because you're a man doesn't mean you have to be the macho, whatever.
Yes.
We can both share in the parenting. We could both go out and get jobs. And I think the women's movement developed a language that challenged gender preconceptions. And I guess I worry a little bit that the men's movement has developed a language that is reinforcing the gender preconceptions by really using the words like feminine and masculine and warrior and stuff like that a lot.
Yeah, I feel very different than the way you feel. I know that there's always a tremendous danger in using any word like warrior. And in the Iron John, I talk about it primarily as the inner warrior, the one who protects you from shame. We're not talking about the warrior as the aggressor. So what I feel is going on is that we, too, are challenging these things, that the typical gender division for men is that they go out and they become violent, they finish their task, they work 14 hours a day for a corporation, they never admit weakness. What we're talking about by bringing poetry in and by bringing in night work and all kinds of relationships to soul and to weeping, sometimes in the middle of a 1 week men's conference, by the third or fourth day, when we bring up the father material, there will be 60 of the 80 men weeping, and they'll sometimes weep for an hour or two. One time I went into a room after a group of men had been there, and what I could smell was the smell of tears in the whole room 2 hours later. So I want to mention to you how much that violates the gender characteristics that most of those men have inherited.
My guest is Robert Bly, a founder of the men's movement. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Robert Bly, and his book Iron John has just come out in paperback. Iron John is kind of built around a fairy tale, as I recall, Grimm's fairy tale.
Well, it's one that the Grimm brothers took.
Yeah, right. And so a lot of the book is spent kind of explaining this story and using it kind of mythically to discuss your larger thoughts about men and women and the men's movement. I guess I'm a little bit uncomfortable using a fairy tale as the basis to understanding gender, only because I feel like if I really used a lot of fairy tales to understand what it's like to be a woman, I'd probably be in a coma waiting for a prince to come along and kiss me. Do you know what I mean?
That's been talked about a lot, and I know that what I would say to you in that situation is that the danger is in taking a fairy tale literally. You know, Americans are not good on metaphorical thinking, as Bush proves again and again.
Well, I'm used to metaphorical thinking, though.
But you see, when there is a woman in a fairy tale, it is not literally a woman. The one who waits is the feminine part either of the man or the woman, or the waiting part of the man or the woman.
See, but you did it again. The one who waits is the feminine part.
That's why the one who's described in the fairy tales.
Yeah, but you see what I mean? Are you kind of like genderizing certain characteristics as being female, waiting, patience?
Right, we're doing that. And that's what Debutante is doing, too. The one waits while other people speak. And she says, learn the other way. Learn that part of yourself, which is described in the fairy tale, as a prince who goes out and does something in the woods. So therefore, if you understand that inside a woman there's a man and a woman, and inside a woman there's a man and a woman, if there's four when there are a man and a woman together, then what the woman is asked to do, which is exactly what the women's movement have asked women to do, go out into the world like a prince, get your horse, go on out there, decide what you want to do, and do it. Now, that instruction also comes through the fairy tales.
Yeah, but again, I mean, you're just dividing all kind of traits as being male and female, and I should add that in the Iron John story, when the young man has to steal the key to the cage from under his mother's pillow, you're seeing that as the mother, not some kind of metaphor for a certain type of personality trait. You know, in your telling of the story, you're talking about men and women, male and female. You don't see it as that kind of metaphor.
Well, usually when I'm trying to do Iron John, I try to run it through two or three times. And the first time you do it in a literal way, the second time you do it in the more metaphorical way. I know Gioia Timpanelli was telling me one time, the time to get the key from out under your mother's pillow is a day when your mother and father are absent. What does that mean? Well, she said, on certain days, in your head, your internalized mother and your internalized father will not be there. That's the day to get it. So we're talking here not only of the physical mother, but of the way we internalize our parents. And that's also suggested by getting the key out. But I'm agreeing with you when I say that whenever you use fairy tales, it's very, very difficult because some of the fairy tales come from a time when the gender things were laid out in a way that they didn't allow any sort of division from. And at the same time, some of it comes from a spiritual teaching in which the feminine and masculine are considered as simple different parts of each psyche. But then you have to look at what the alternative is. One of the things I think that... What is the alternative? Sociology? In other words, you cannot move human beings by using completely degenderized, completely abstract words. Sociology has failed completely, in my opinion, in talking about the men's movement, which is something I know about. I don't know about its work with the women's movement. Why do we have poetry? Because poetry penetrates down to the deepest levels of the psyche, where feminine and masculine still exist and where movements can be made back and forth. Sociological language, abstract language, academic language, often philosophical language, can be sanitized, but no one ever wants to change after hearing it. It doesn't penetrate deeply enough. So I'm saying the same thing here, that it's dangerous to do the fairy tales. It's more dangerous to put the language in the hands of sociologists and let them try to do it.
Well, let me pick up on what you're saying,
yep.
Because a lot of the myths and stories that you're drawing on are either fairy tales or they're from tribal cultures, from indigenous cultures of centuries and centuries ago. Both of those kinds of stories are drawn from times or drawn from cultures in which there was a much more, I think, rigid sense of what a man does and what a woman does. The fairy tales come from an era of kings and queens, a kind of pre-egalitarian, pre-democratic era, and certainly a pre-feminist era. And I'm just suggesting that it's possible that those stories might really serve to reinforce.
I agree with you.
Stereotypes.
What do you suggest doing? In other words, I agree with you. And when a fairy storyteller tells a story, it's important for him to put in those things that you're saying. But does that mean you abandon that literature completely?
No, but you're using it as kind of like the Bible.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's the clearest thing that I've ever heard about the development of the male soul from the child onward. And if you're going to throw away that, then you're going to have to throw away the Vedas. I think the stories that have been preserved by memory in Europe are older than the Vedas. They're the oldest literature that we have. And I think it's very dangerous to say that all of this literature should be thrown away because there's dangers to men or women when you use it.
But I have to say, though, having read your book and also watched the Bill Moyer special with you from a couple of years ago,
yeah,
I'm not sure that you've really taken those stories and put them into a context that takes into account sexism and racism, class issues. I mean, do you feel
that you've put it
into a kind of social and political context?
No, I think that's true. I didn't cover everything in that book. And I think it's also true that there wasn't enough attention in Iron John to economic situations involving women and men and to class issues involving women and men. I agree with that.
Okay. You have become an important figure to many men. You've become almost like a father figure to them and almost like a spiritual leader to them. And some people have even used the word guru, which is
a word.
Yeah, I know that you do. I know that you do, but do you ever fear that you're in danger of being seen that way by men in the movement? And do you feel that you have to take certain precautions to, A, not let your ego get too big, and B, to not let people see you in a more powerful way than you think is appropriate for you to be seen?
Yeah, I think that's quite right, and I have to try to do that every day. If I don't, I'm finished. But I also take the precaution this year, for example, of doing no teaching in the men's thing at all. I'm spending the whole year really in bed reading books and simply refusing all sorts of engagements. So that helps me to make them understand that I'm happy to be a father figure to some of them, but it doesn't mean that I give up my private life.
I thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry. I enjoyed the conversation a lot.
Robert Bly, his book about men, Iron John, has just come out in paperback. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.